Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to The River. This is Tom Fuller coming to you from beautiful Portland, Oregon, with my friends and your hosts, authors Maxine Marcellini and Jeannie St. John Taylor. Every Monday, Maxine and Jeannie get together to share what's on their hearts with listeners around the world. They chat with other authors and friends on a wide variety of topics. Some bring a laugh, some cause us to wipe away a tear, but all of them send rivers of blessing into our lives. These shows can be life-changing if our hearts are open and allow the river of God's love to pour into our deepest needs. So, listeners, are you ready? Now's the perfect time for me to stop talking and let the ladies take us on today's exciting journey down the river.
Well, listeners, this is Maxine, and I'm very glad to be with you today and my co-host, Jeannie. But the two of us are very much disturbed by the events taking place in Boston today with the bombs that have gone off during the Boston Marathon. Jeannie, what do you think's happening?
You know, it's just a very, very sad time, and I wish that people would understand that it's not just a matter of catching who did it, although we've been praying that that would happen, but it's a matter of if our nation doesn't turn back to God. All these things, everything is connected to that. Everything is connected to turning our back on Him. And that includes the financial crises and the political problems we have going on. We need God. We need His help. He needs to be in charge of us.
Yeah, and I'm just joining you in prayer today that the Lord will comfort the people that have been injured.
Yes.
That He'll help the families work their way through this crazy day in history. It touches me a little bit closer to home because that's where Charlie, my husband, came from. So I've been in Boston many times, and it's hard to imagine this historic city that's so important to our country in its context of the colonies beginning. And Boston Marathon is one of those things that is just world-renowned. People come from everywhere for this event. And how such a tragedy can be taking place. It just breaks my heart. So please know, listeners, that we're praying for you out there and do care. And today we do have a wonderful program prepared. We are actually going to have as our guest Steve and Annie Chapman, who have been traveling and singing and writing and speaking about family issues since 1975. And I've been a big fan of Steve and Annie Chapman for years. One of their music albums that I enjoyed years ago was Kiss of Hearts, and I loved that song. But let's learn a little bit about them. They've been married since 1975, and Annie grew up on a farm, much as I did, so she did things with the cows and the pigs and had a good time doing that, saying the best thing about growing up in the country was she grew up in the country. And Steve is a musician, a songwriter, an author, an avid outdoorsman. And he says on any given day you might find him outside hunting, fishing, hiking, kayaking, or riding his motorcycle. And he even likes mowing the yard. So he loves to teach others about loving the Creator. They both write. She loves to write books that help families, and so does he. And what I like about some of what Steve is doing is that he... as a preacher's kid, says he's a second born, and he was he likes to talk to the men, the outdoors men, and let them know that their manhood can, and all that outdoorsy stuff can also speak to their ability to love and protect their family. And so Annie's favorite way to spend her time is to help her children and help their children. So Annie and Steve, welcome to our program today.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Good to be with you.
So what kind of gaps have I left out on that?
Oh, well, you pretty much covered everything. We met back in 1963 in junior high school. It was love at first sight for Annie.
It took you longer.
Oh.
You know how irresistible 13-year-old boys can be.
Well, not to me personally right now, but yes.
Back then.
Yeah, we met in West Virginia. That's our home state, but we live in Tennessee. We married, as you mentioned, in 1975. I didn't ask her out for a date until 74. It takes me a while to wise up. But in November of 74, I popped the question, wilt thou, and she wilted. And it's November, December, January. Just a few months later, we got married. We didn't tell that to our kids for a long time, but.
Well, you've known each other for long enough.
Yeah.
My grandmother said she thought, you know, how you date and try to get to know each other before you're married. And she said she thinks that you're just as apt to get your mate if you run into a crowd and grab the first person you can find. So dating is not always the best preparation for what marriage is actually going to be like. But as it turned out, we were friends and still are. Some working on 39 years later, we're still friends.
Well, I like that, and I love looking at the picture of you back in 1975 that you've got on your website, StephenAndrewChapman.com. It's just the typical 1975 look. You guys are adorable.
I had hair.
You had
and I had
hair.
Very long hair.
Yes, you were very cute.
Yes, we were adorable.
Yes.
Yes, and then your family pictures you posted on there further down. But we're going to today talk about a couple of your books. We want to talk about married lovers and married friends, and we want to talk about hot topics for couples. And both of those are really going to be something I think our listeners can gain knowledge from. But one of the things that I was kind of prompted to ask was about Steve's marriage proposal. So let's get that out of the way first. Annie, what did he do?
Well, you know how kids nowadays, the proposal is a really big deal, and they'll have, you know, videotape it, and they have the big ring and the flowers and all that. And our experience of getting engaged was not so so formalized. We, you know, we dated a week and then got engaged, basically. we were taking a walk, and Steve, you know, we're walking along. Steve says, you know, we're getting along pretty good. It's like, yeah, you know, a whole week, you know. And he said, what do you think about just making this situation permanent? And that's the proposal. And I don't think that would meet the standard of kids nowadays. But, you know, I was teasing him one day in front of my cousin about the most unromantic proposal in the history of all proposals. And my cousin said she thought it was actually very romantic because – she said, he didn't ask you to get married. He said, let's make it permanent. And
oh,
I thought, well,
there you go.
Yeah, that's not too bad, is it? And that's what we've been doing for all these years, is trying to make this thing permanent.
I was doing right.
It's not bad, but I would say that he's probably a better wordsmith now than he was then. Would you agree
with
that, Annie?
Yes, he's come a long way, baby. He really has.
Oh, well, you certainly have, and I want to start talking about the Married Lovers and Married Friends book, I think, first. But I want to have our listeners get the privilege of listening to your song. You have my word. This is a new song that I hear was written for this 38th anniversary, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
The words in it. So I pray that everyone listens closely. And then after we're done with this, let's pick up with the Married Lovers and Married Friends, because you two are such an example of that, and the rest of us need to know how you're doing it.
Have my heart, it's yours alone. You have my soul till time is gone. But there's one thing of greater worth, I give it now. You have my word, I promise you, hopes and all my dreams. You have my years, all that remains. Still there's one thing, a greater word. I give it now. You have my word. You have my word. I promise you, as long as I live, I will be true. Love is more than I deserve. I'll hold it close. You have my word. I'll hold it close. You have my word.
Beautiful. Isn't that amazing? I love the meaning and the words in that song.
Oh,
thank you for writing it and letting us share that today.
Thank you.
And isn't God good to give us marriage that gets us through those times and keeps us together?
Well, it's just marriage is just God's picture of how he loves us. And the marriage of Christ and the bride, and we get to live that out, hopefully, and do justice to that picture every day.
Hmm.
So, Annie, why don't you help us understand what it is to remain married lovers? How do you remain friends and married lovers?
Well, you know, I believe that the quality of your marriage is really depends on the degree of kindness that you show one another. And people, a lot of times when we do marriage weekends, people come wanting to know how to be better lovers. But what they really need is to, first of all, they need to let God work on them as individuals before they ever can do right by each other as a couple. But then as a couple, the more we develop our friendship and the more we treat each other with kindness and deference and consideration and the way that you would, you know, that you don't have many friends if you don't treat them right. But when you do that with a spouse, the byproduct of that is then you become good lovers as you really make your friendship really a part of your whole marriage.
And I would also add to that, Philippians 2 is a passage that we try to live by and present in our marriage conferences, that it talks about seeing the other's needs as more important than your own. And the scripture does not deny our own needs. It just says seeing the other's needs is more important, and that's the mind of Christ.
Let me see if I can remember. It says, make my joy complete by being of the same mind, maintaining the same love, united in spirit, intent on one purpose. Now, doesn't that sound like that'd be a pretty good marriage?
Yeah.
But the idea is, how do you get all that good stuff out of two people that aren't so terrific? Two people that are very flawed and immature and selfish and pig-headed.
Wait a minute,
and stubborn.
I'm listening.
But that's
I'm
all
wait,
we
I'm
have to work
to
with is two
questions.
Very, very flawed people. But how do you get all that good stuff, you know, one love, the same mind, one purpose, united in spirit? Well, it says, do nothing from selfishness or empty conceit, but with humility of mind. Let each of you regard the other's needs as more important than your own, not merely looking out for your own personal interest, but looking out for the interest of the other. And then verse 5, of course, we all love. It says, have this attitude in you that was in Christ Jesus. And it goes on to describe a servant's heart, how Christ came and laid down his life and served. And so that is one of the main lag bolts, we call it, a linchpin for our marriage, is that Philippians 2 passage. And Steve wrote a poem years and years ago that we have on our wall that says, We believe a man and wife would have a better married life if they would try out serving one another. For deeper love is felt when what is done is not for self, but when it's done to satisfy the other. I think that is foundational. That, you know, it's not easy to live out, but it's very simple. That whole concept is very simple. It's just not easy to live out.
And we've reduced it to a what we call it a romantic competition. We try to try to outdo each other, and it's fun when both people play that game. But if only one's playing it, it's no fun.
Let's tell me what you do to do that. What are some of the things you guys do?
Well, I'll just give you one quick example. Right now in Tennessee, turkey season's in. I love to hunt the wild turkey, and for those of you who think I'm talking about whiskey, I'm talking about a wild turkey bird. And season came in a few years ago on our anniversary, which is March 29th. And I have a tradition with my buddies that on Friday night we go out and what we call roost the birds, and that's find out where they're roosting in the trees, and so we can be in that area the next morning. We stay overnight and have food and fun and fellowship, and then we hunt the next morning. Well, assuming that Saturday morning was going to come and I had to stay home got to stay home and be a on my anniversary, Annie saw the look on my face.
Actually, I heard him crying in the other room.
Not true. Well, yeah. Anyway, she said, Steve, I know you want to go out and Don and Eddie and hunt. Said, look, we can do something tomorrow evening, and you go out and hunt with the guys. I'll send you some chili and some cookies. You guys just have a good time, and we'll do something Saturday night. And, you know, the way we put it, it looked like a turkey hunt, but it felt like love.
Aww.
And I've reciprocated, but she's always seems to be winning.
Yeah, but we keep track because, see, we tend to be very competitive people. And so we keep track of who is out-serving the other one the most. And I won that day.
Oh, big time. Mm.
Big time won.
Yeah, big points on that one.
And I like that. I like to always be ahead. But he, Steve's no slackard either. I wanted a big table for my birthday because our family's growing, and so I took Steve to Sam's Wholesale Club. I don't know if you guys have those, but I found a table and chairs, and it was just the right size, but it was one of those tall tables, like the bistro type.
Oh, yeah.
And so I took Steve to see it. He didn't like it. He said, I don't like sitting up that high. And he said, it'll hurt my mom's back and all this. He had all these reasons he didn't like the table. And I said, oh, okay. So I go off to speak at a ladies' conference. I come back about 3 days later, and when I came home, he had bought that table. But you had to put everything together. You had to put the chairs together and all. He put all that together, and I said, you didn't like the table. Why did you go buy that? And he said, I didn't like it, but you did.
Aww.
And so, see, it looked like a table, but it felt like love.
Now all the guys are hating me.
Well, what about your mom's back? How did she do? I'm a little worried about her now.
Well, she only comes here about twice a year, so we accommodate her and put her a table over in the corner. No, I'm kidding.
we have another table that we can set at when she comes.
Maybe you give her a step stool. I might need one.
Yeah,
that's right.
Shorter people.
Yeah, no one likes their feet to dangle like that. But
you know, those who are listening, if you put your interest in that blank, you know, it looks like blank, but it feels like love.
I love that principle.
I do too.
So good.
And we have a song called "It Feels Like Love," and it's about a couple that one guy, he doesn't like dancing, but she does. And so he puts some George Strait in the music machine, and he starts dancing with her. And she goes to the NASCAR race with her and with him. And it's seeing the other's needs as important. And that feeds into treating one another kindly. And if you do that, what you end up is you end up with a good friend. Good friends treat each other nicely. And that environment is is a wonderful place to live. It feels like a good place to come back to in the evening.
If you've ever noticed 1 Corinthians 13, the love chapter, when it lists what love is, not one thing that's listed is an emotion or a feeling. They're all actions and attitudes. And
very
so when
good.
People say, well, I don't love my spouse anymore, you know, what they're saying is I don't have those funny, you know, those fluttery feelings. I don't have the emotions that they think should go with it. Well, if it's your spouse, you treat them with love. You act lovingly and have a loving attitude. And I have found that when you act the right way, eventually you start to feel the right way.
Yeah.
So we need to get our minds off of what love is. It's not feelings. It's actions and attitudes.
And we admit that we have a huge advantage over some folks in that our parents, my mom and dad are still living and are married now, how many, 66 years?
66 years.
Wow.
And Annie's parents, before they died, it was over 50 years, 52, so... We have a huge advantage, and those who are listening who may not have had that picture to look at as an encouraging picture, the good news is that's why we believe Christ is so important, is because he pulls us out of ourselves and causes us to look upward and look at others instead of, you know, navel-gazing. And, you know, that's something that we teach, that that's why it's important to work on our lives individually and are spiritual, because most marriage problems are simply spiritual problems that manifest themselves in the marriage. Just like what our nation is going through, it's not a physical problem, it's a spiritual problem today. And
you know,
go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, you guys have such words of wisdom, and your songs show, I pray for songwriters, and I pray that God will give them wisdom and fill them with his spirit so that they can explain to other people. Would you mind talking about some of your favorite songs and the concepts that you're trying to get across with those songs?
Well, as Steve said about one of them that I just love is called What If. We lived for several years just two houses down from a Mary Williams, who was a widow. And she had been a widow for 15 years. And here we were, just young, just a young couple with little itty-bitty kids. And Mary was so generous to share her life with us. And she would come up and sit on the porch early in the morning while the kids were asleep and let me and Steve go for a walk. And she would talk about her husband in such a loving way. And so one day Steve asked her, said, what do you miss the most about John being gone? And she said, it's a two-word question he always asked, and it let me know that he loved me and that he thought about me. And the question was, what if? You know, what if we go out to dinner? What if we go see your sister? And so they had an incredible, that couple, John and Mary, even though John was already with the Lord, had an incredible influence on us as a young couple, because we began to take their wisdom and incorporate it in our families. So even couples, maybe they don't have the longevity in their parents, or they haven't had anyone they could look at and say, oh, this is how it's done. Look around. There's people who can influence your life. And so I love the song What If because of Mary and John.
Another song that probes a little deeper that we do in our marriage conferences is a song called Play Little Boy. And it's a story about a little boy whose mom says, let's go see my friend. And while they're there, the little boy and that friend's little boy get together in a room, and next thing you know, they're engaging in looking at the friend's son's the father's pornography, and the damage that is done because of that failure is immense, and we address that. And when you can do it in a song, sometimes music is the sugar that helps the medicine go down a little easier. Sometimes you can say things and they sound very abrasive, but when you put a melody with it and tell a story, And sometimes that's all the person needs is to open that door, and then we talk about, oh, give them some practical advice how to overcome that temptation. And so music, yeah, it's very much a part of what we do. And when we do our presentations, it's just guitar and two vocals, and it's very simple, very non-clinical, and we love doing those events. And we, as Annie says, we, being a farmer's daughter, I feel like a pig in mud at these events.
Oh, well, I wish our time wasn't moving so quickly. So we're going to hopefully be able to run the program a few extra minutes today. But I want to move you folks over to the hot topics for couples, so we leave people with a lot of good takeaway here. We've already given them a bunch of stuff, and I wish we could talk to you the whole afternoon because you're that interesting.
Yeah.
And by the way, we want to say thanks to Dana Bacon, Maxine.
He introduced
us to you, and he's from over in the Knoxville area. And just if he's listening, we want to say hey to him and thanks.
Yeah, big shout out, Dana. We love you.
Was that pig in mud comment a transition to bacon? Or
only Jeannie would have caught that.
Oh, you are quick.
You are too quick. That's amazing.
Oh, anyway, he does like bacon, though. He does eat it. Oh, Dana was the guy who did a lot of the music when Charlie was doing some preaching at the Gospel Mission in Medford, Oregon. And our lives intertwined there, plus with the Crown Financial Ministries. And they are just dear friends. And so I'm so thankful they introduced us to you, Steve and Annie.
Yeah, he's got a new grandbaby, too.
I know. I've been admiring that online.
And we have one in the oven. Our daughter-in-law is pregnant with our first grandson. We have grand girls. Now we're going to have a grandson.
About 6 weeks.
The little hunting buddy coming up.
Yeah.
Well, tell us something about Hot Topics for Couples, you guys. We need to know a little bit about that. What are the hot-button issues that keep people from being these married lovers and married friends?
Well, what we did was when we were looking at writing this book, we did surveys with couples. We had about 500 couples that when we would do a concert or speaking, we had these surveys, and we would ask them to fill these out. The men filled out one, and the women filled out another. And so it was anonymous, and they were able to be very honest. And so we asked them what were the things that were the most important to them, the topics that they wanted addressed. And so we came up with the 10, and then throughout the book you'll read different comments that they made. But just the different topics are...
Here, I'll read the chapter titles. And again, these are drawn from many, many of the comments that we got from folks. I need a teammate, not a cellmate. I need a partner, not a parent. And the challenge of change. And that chapter is affecting us right now. We're going through a lot of changes in our lives. And then this one would take some explanation, but I'll say it anyway. Connected or co-naked? I need a friend. Making a living or making a killing? Lead or get out of the way? And that one was a surprise to us, how many times that leadership issue showed up in the questionnaires that we sent out. A regret-free marriage, and then vintage wine or vinegar.
That's about growing older.
Yeah, that's a title, actually.
And we have a choice as you get older. You can either turn into, you know, our love can be, when you take care of your love, and it can become a fine vintage wine that has value, or when it's neglected and impurities are allowed into your love, it turns into vinegar. So that's really about the maturing of love. But we had a great time writing this book and just really appreciated the different couples who allowed us to use their comments and their stories. And I think that if you're a couple and you're struggling in your marriage and you read this, one thing you find out, not only some really good information and motivation, but you also find out you're not alone. And sometimes that helps as much as anything to know that other people struggle with the same things, and it's not, you know, there's nothing wrong with you. You're just going through what other people are going through.
And if I were going to pull out, I'm sorry?
That's all right. Go ahead.
If I were going to pull out one page out of this, how many pages is it? It's 213 or so pages. If I was going to pull one page out, it might be page 85. It's the R in the acrostic for the word friendship. We broke down the word friendship. And am I saying it's an acrostic or an acronym?
Yeah, it's an acrostic.
When I emailed you, I said acronym, and Annie said, no, that's not right. Anyway, yeah, it's the R. And the R stands for respect one another with your words.
Mm.
It is amazing how what tone you can set in your marriage with how you talk to one another. And we've discovered that words are only 7% of our communication. The rest of it is body language and tone and like the word fine. I mean, when you say, oh, that's fine, or I've heard fine. And you
did
have
you
to
hear
learn
that
how
from
to,
Annie?
Well, no.
Of course not.
And, you know, and I've also learned that certain words mean other things than what they say. Like, you missed a turn, honey. And honey there means idiot.
Oh. Ouch.
But it's said so nicely that I take it easy. And James 3, we don't have time to go there, but James 3 is an important passage. I think it's verses 1 through 8, talks about the power of the tongue and how dangerous it can be, but yet how it can build a marriage and make it better.
Actually, in James 3, it says that the course of your life is determined by your tongue, by what you say. And we say the quality of your life is determined by the kindness you show. Well,
yeah.
There's no greater way that we show kindness than with our words, because words can either hurt or help. And we give couples a challenge in our marriage seminars. We ask them to for 36 hours to commit that they will only have sweet, loving, kind communication. That's attitude and all the whole thing, not only our words. For 36 hours consecutively that they will be kind to one another with their words. And what we've received, the feedback we've gotten, was couples saying, I just didn't realize I'd gotten into the habit of being ugly with my words and just being curt and sharp not even think before I said. And they said what happened with the 36 hours is they just became conscious of their words, and that in itself helped them.
Yeah.
Well, Jeannie, do you have one more question you'd like to ask our delightful guest this afternoon?
Well, I just, on a scale of 1 to 10, how would you, if 10 being best, what number would you give your 40 years together?
Oh, an 11.
Aha,
that's fun. That's good.
People think that we're just kidding, but we love being with one another. And Steve treats me with such kindness and respect and deference and all of those good things. I like to be around him. And when someone treats you that way, you really do. They make you feel good about yourself. And so
here's the deal. We can't make each other happy. Now, we can make each other miserable.
Right.
But ultimately, our joy, that deep abiding joy, does not come from one another. It comes from a relationship with Christ.
Right. Yes.
And if we dwell there, if that's where we abide, my mom says, I can do a marriage conference. And we take 3 days sometimes with people to do stuff. She says, I can do it in 10 seconds. Mom, how can you do that? She said, well, born again people get along. Now y'all go home and live that way.
There you go. Y'all go home and live that way. That is really good advice. It would get the job done, wouldn't it?
That's
right. What I'm hearing, though, that I want our listeners to know is, maybe you didn't have this example before you in, of a good marriage being lived out in your home when you grew up. Maybe your family has fallen apart. Maybe like me, I had a second marriage due to divorce. But it's possible to learn these things. God has them for us all to grab hold of if we'll just, you know, live like that born-again Christian that we say we are. So I wish I was close enough to come to some of your conferences because I would totally do it. I think you guys are doing an amazing job for the families and the marriages across this country and around the world.
Well, for the people who can't come to our marriage seminars, they can go to our website, and we've got all kinds of posts and songs and all kinds of things on there that's designed to help build up the family.
I just put You Have My Word last night on the site with the blog called You Have My Word, and if folks want to get it, they can. It's a simple download.
I really like that song.
I love it.
It says something about that permanence. Will you make this permanent with me?
Yeah.
You have my word and the stick-to-itive commitment that is needed in so many lives today. Is there one last parting thing the two of you would like to say to our audience? And we're going to have to close the show.
Oh.
Well, I really would encourage them to go to the website. It can say so much more than we have time to do here. But I just appreciate so much you letting us have access to your audience and the people who trust you. And we just pray that nothing that we've said is reflected in any way except in a good way, and that Christ would be glorified.
And finally, I would add that we very much understand there's been somewhat of a shadow over the conversation with what's going on in Boston. We join you in prayers for the people there. And Annie's Heidi, our daughter's pastor, finished the race 15 minutes before, and he texted he and his family and kids, and everybody was at the finish line.
His grandchildren were at the finish line.
We're grateful that they're safe, but sad that there's so many others suffering right now. So we join you in prayers for our nation today.
Thank you for telling us that. God bless the two of you, and thank you once again for being our delightful guests on today's program on the river.
Thanks for your time.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
This is Tom Fuller saying thank you for joining us on The River today. I pray blessings have come your way. Please check out our hosts' websites to learn a little more about them. Maxine Marcellini is the author of Rebuilding Families $1 at a Time, Blended Families, and Raising Children in Blended Families. She's a life coach whose website, rebuildingfamilies.net, is full of family helps and resources. Jeannie St. John Taylor is the author and illustrator of more than 25 books for adults as well as children. You'll find her books plus a link to read her newest biblical fiction, City of a Thousand Gods, on her website at jeanniestjohntaylor.com. All our programs are archived for later listening enjoyment. Consider posting a comment after today's show. And please let your friends know about what's happening at the river. Most of all, remember, you are never alone in this river called life. Jesus is with you and only a prayer away.